is Troy. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect those of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Mid-Coast Radio Project, its board, staff, and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is Ms. Benita Powell, and she's with the Total Man CDC, and we're going to be talking about the Total Man CDC Community Development Corporation and their apprenticeship training program. Good morning, Benita. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Jackson. How are you?
I'm doing well. How long have you been involved? Well, first, let's go back. Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from Kansas City?
Yep, I am a native of Kansas City, born and raised here, went to what was then Lincoln Academy. I went off to school, and it took me 20, 30 years to return, but I returned about 8 or 10 years ago back to Kansas City, and still live in the urban core, and really on the same block that I grew up on. So, yep, glad to be home.
Yes, and I will say this, for those that don't know, that still live in the community like I do, the homes that we had, that we grew up in at that point in time, when you could have bought an house for $40,000, $50,000, now that same house is $200,000 plus, so it behooves people to, you know, to keep those community houses, keep those family houses.
Yep.
So how long have you been involved with the Total Man Community Development Center? Community Development Corporation.
Yep. Actually, I have been with the CDC since its inception. So I was one of the original board members, actually wrote the 501c3 documentation and all of that. So I have been involved from the very beginning. And so we have grown from kind of 0-1 program to each year for the past few years, we've added and or expanded our programming to what it is today.
And the organization is having a birthday, so how old are they now?
Yep, we will be 10 years old. And so this is still exciting times for us. Again, we've grown, and so we've got to figure out how we celebrate that monumental birthday sometime this year. So,
and for many people may not know, Total Man Community Development Corporation is located in the heart of the city, right there off of East 31st Street.
It is. It is located at 3100 East 31st Street. For some that are familiar and native to Kansas City, it is located in the old Metropolitan Church. And so the Total Man CDC is and started out as the community outreach arm of St. Luke Memorial Church of God in Christ. And so when I returned to Kansas City, my family attended that church, and so they had always done a community outreach, and so this was an opportunity to expand that community outreach beyond what they had been doing. And I don't think anybody kind of envisioned that it would grow to what it is today. So,
and prior to, let me step back. You all are located in the historic Santa Fe neighborhood, which is where Buck O'Neill's home is, Satchel Paige home is, the Ollie Gates, and a lot of other prominent Kansas Cityans who came before us. You know, their families resided there. Got a couple of questions I want to ask. But first, let's start here. So, what is the vision of the Total Man Community Development Corporation?
So, for us, the vision is all about having a healthy community, and we want to be an asset in the community in which we live and operate. And so, all of the programs that we have initiated are initiated around economic development, educational development, community involvement, housing and urban development. It is all centered around those kind of tenants. And so our vision is just to be supportive and do whatever programming that it takes to have a healthy community. And we understand that that is building one person, one man at a time in terms of having a sustainable community.
And so that's your vision. What's the mission of the Total Man Community Development Corporation?
Our mission is to be able to develop programming that supports the entire family. And by supporting the entire family, some of our programs are specifically geared toward men, some of them are geared toward youth, some of them to the woman. But by building those sustainable programs, we are able to support and have a mission to be able to support and have a sustainable community.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the first time I actually saw one of you all's events was the community block party. Mm-hmm. And you all made sure that everyone was involved and engaged. How important is it for the community to be involved and engaged in a Total Man Community Development Corporation?
That's what who we are. So we want to and believe that that community community involvement is the center of what we do. So all of our, whether it be our fall festival, whether it be our first Saturdays, everything that we do, we is centered around the community and having either partnerships with other community organizations, volunteers from the community, serving the population in the community. So it is all driven about having engagement, whether that be individuals and or neighborhoods and or just local community partnerships. And we partner with state agencies, we partner with federal agencies. So we believe that that's key for us in terms of that engagement. And we believe that we're generally a good partner in terms of working with other organizations.
And the CDC also offers a healthy lifestyle programs. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know when you all have that fall fest, that is a huge blood pressure checks. Checking people's blood sugars, all those different things are incorporated into that event.
Yeah, we probably incorporate healthy lifestyles into pretty much everything that we do, whether it be events, our fatherhood program, we do blood pressure checks with that. And so our healthy lifestyles, some of the signature programs that we have in that is that we have a community garden. So you may be familiar with it. We purchased 4 vacant lots, probably 5 or 6 years ago that have now been turned into a community garden. So that's one aspect in terms of nutrition, having a healthy lifestyle. We do a pantry 4th Saturday of the month still. And then within healthy lifestyles, kind of pre-COVID, we also would have various sessions with women where we would do exercising, blood pressure checks, and do some nutritional classes. So all of that for us are intentional programming related to healthy lifestyles. We know in Santa Fe and the zip code 64128, we have the highest morbidity rate related to things like high blood pressure, like diabetes, that are totally controllable diseases. But we as a community don't necessarily educate ourselves and or practice the habits in terms of getting out walking or eating healthy in order to manage those and not let those chronic diseases lead to death in our community.
And that is so true, is that we die from a lack of knowledge, and information is knowledge and knowledge is power. So that is one of the things that we definitely have to, that's why I do this show, give people information, and you can go a long way with that. One of the other aspects is you all's educational development component. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I think, and again, that pillar in terms of education is wrapped in almost in everything that we do. We just kind of talked about it related to healthy lifestyles, and then I'll use examples in terms of our the classes that we are now, and I think we'll talk about a little bit more related to our workforce development. That's education for us. It also stems across economic development as well. We also do fatherhood programming. In those fatherhood programming, or in that programming, we do 10 weeks and use an evidence-based curriculum in terms of educating our dads. And so education, while it is a pillar of what we do and one of our thrusts, is also just integrated in all of the work that we do as well. From an educational standpoint. And to your point, we believe that if we can give those, nobody necessarily wants to be sat down all the time and just and talk to and say, you need to do this, this, and this. But if you can just plant some of those seeds, some of those golden nuggets, when you're having a conversation with that dad, or when you're working in the community garden, or when you have a mobile drive-through and you can give some literature and information, all of those things are planting seeds. We also do what we call Voices of Power, which is a gospel concert. Again, another way for us to utilize music, which transcends across individuals, but we focus on mental health. Again, one of those types of not only health things that we need in our community to hear about, because mental health isn't talked about as much, but we take the format of the gospel concert to be able to educate people about mental health. So again, education for us is integrated across the programs that we do.
And there is such a stigma, especially surrounding mental health in the African American community. The work that you're doing is so great for that. How do we continue that conversation and get people to understand that, you know, I had a sister and she had a mental illness, but even though you may have the mental illness, it's a part of who you are. It doesn't define who you are. And she was a teacher, you know, even with her mental illness, that there are so many good medications, so many good resources, but we have to open up. You know, one of the things is we always say, well, you know, well, Aunt Betty has always been that way, but nobody's ever wanted to sit down and see, okay, what's Aunt Betty going through? Because in the African-American community, there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of stress, and it impacts a lot of different things, from jobs to the crime rate.
Yeah, and so just with what we've been talking about, it's having the conversation. So we're no longer putting that, you know, in the closet, or that it's you know, that's what you keep in your house. That's what you keep with your family. So for us, it is about having those conversations, those hard conversations, and demonstrating that through some practical tips, some practical knowledge. So, for example, at our Voices of Power last year, we had three speakers. One of those was a young lady that was very open about what mental health looked like for her when she was going through some valleys, and what how that impacted her, how that impacted her children, and what steps she had to take in terms of saying it is okay to go see a doctor. Just like a physical illness, mental illness is something that is treatable, but you need to have a diagnosis. You need to speak with a professional. And sometimes, even from a church perspective, you can go and have your pastor pray for you, but just like any other health condition, you also need to get a professional in that area. So she spoke to that. We also had two other practicing clinicians that talked about what that looks like. Both of them were African American. And so just talking about what that now looks like in our community, tools, tips, and just a basic questionnaire, five things. If you are feeling this way and or you know somebody that's feeling this way, here are some things to watch out for in terms of, because mental health looks different for everybody, and having that healthy mental state. So for us, in terms of mental health, it is having those conversations, exposing resources, and even for our fatherhood classes, we now bring in mental health and have that as one of our resource topics, because men need to understand that, you know, it's okay in terms of whatever emotions you're going through. And like to your point earlier, how that mental health impacts you as being a dad, because it will impact your relationship with your child. It will impact whether you are able to hold a job or not, how angry you become at certain points, how you manage that anger, you know, and ultimately getting help for that. It is okay, and it is what we need to talk about, where we need to make sure that we are supporting our community to seek out those professional resources.
You've got a lot that you all do in the community, and I'm happy to do this interview because people need to know about you all, a great organization, and the things that you do. And another aspect is you have an urban development. How important is urban development in an area where there's not a lot of development at all?
Yeah, and so in probably being transparent, that is probably where we have had the least amount of programming and focus. But I will say on a couple things, we believe it's important, you know, in terms of having and maintaining our assets in the community, and no more land is being created. So we got to take care of the land and utilize that land, property, and assets that we have in the community. That's what we have. And so even when using example in terms of the community gardens, at one point that was blight, right, in terms of four vacant lots. So for us, that is part of urban development and being able to take what are potentially vacant lots and turning those into assets, whether that be community gardens, whether that be rebuilding homes. It is key in terms of economic development for the urban core, and even more specifically for the third district and what is east of Troost at this point. And so we believe that, you know, urban development is key. What we have started to do, and I think you and I talked about it briefly before coming on air, is we are partnering with organizations now to also educate as part of financial literacy. Financial literacy helps open the door in terms of not only education, but also looking at urban development, right? How do I start to do estate planning as it relates to, you know, the assets, the home that I have, and or moving from a renter to a homeowner. All of those things in terms of home ownership, estate planning, are key in terms of urban development. And some of that is starting to educate. Some of that is doing it ourselves in terms of as an organization. And so that's what we want to be able to do and start to do more of that from a programming standpoint.
And you all's program actually starts tomorrow at the Delta. I mean, they've got some great benefits. They're going to be giving away gas cards. They're going to be giving away refurbished computers. And it's only a 4-week program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think as probably do most people in the community, I wear several different hats. And so in addition to operating Total Man CDC, I'm a proud member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated and part of the Kansas City, Missouri Alumni Chapter. We also have the Deed Foundation, which is a 501c3 organization and the owner of the Delta Athenaeum, which is a historical building located at 900 East Linwood. And so coming up, starting tomorrow, Total Man will be partnering with the Deed Foundation and the alumni chapter here, along with a couple other sponsors, Chess and Central Bank, to provide financial literacy. So it is a 4-week series. The first week is all about budgeting, savings, and investment. The next week is about credit and the importance of credit. Thirdly, we will be talking about home buying. And lastly, estate planning. Got to have those power of attorneys in place, those wills. And think about that, though, insurance and things of that nature before you actually need it. So this is a great opportunity for our organization to partner with other great organizations, if I have to say so myself. This is our first program of that nature. So we're excited about it. We're excited about our partners. We're excited that we actually are filled at this point in terms of families that have signed up. We have an adult track as well as a youth track. We think it is important to empower the entire family. So we have this 4-week series, but you can certainly look forward to us presenting more educational financial literacy and programming in partnership to the community.
In addition to your 4 Saturday food pantries, Total Man CDC also has a food feeding program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yep. So our feeding program, our regular feeding program, we are a state sponsor for the Summer Feeding Service Program. And what that means is that we partner with the Housing Authority. We partner with Kansas City Parks and Recreation, Community Centers, Upper Room, Campfire, any of those organizations that do enrichment during the summer. We partner with them to make sure that the children have healthy meals as part of that day. We know as a community that when children are out of school, they sometimes don't get that healthy meal. A lot of kids in our area, and whether it's in the urban core or in the suburbs, it's still the same in that kids eat on free and reduced lunch. And when that goes away during the summertime, we as an organization step in to provide those meals by partnering with some of those enrichment programs. We typically provide anywhere from 1,800 to, during the height of COVID, 2,500 serve 2,500 meals a day. So, or I should say children, we generally serve 2 meals. So at some point, you know, during the height of COVID, we were providing between 4,000 and 5,000 meals a day. That is our summer program. And then through the school year, we also do with the state, in partnership with the state, our after school feeding program. So those are our two primary feeding programs that we do as it relates to youth and our community. We also, as I mentioned, do have, from a food insecurity standpoint, we have our pantry that is the fourth Saturday of the month. And then we also have some other kind of special events. So, for example, we will have our first Saturdays, which is a mobile drive that we do in partnership with Senator Barbara Ann Washington, Swope Health, and other community partners. We started that during COVID and was doing it once a month. And since COVID has... or since we're in kind of the after effects, I wouldn't say that it's totally gone, but we still continue to do that on periodically. And so we do that for Easter and for Thanksgiving. So on April 1st, we will be back out at Swope as part of kind of food insecurity. And we will provide meals, or I should say food. And then we also provide toiletries, household items like laundry detergent. And then we always do something kind of for that particular season. So with it being Easter, we'll be providing Easter baskets for the kiddos. So when we did that, and now when we do it on these periodic basis, we serve probably 500 to 600 families within a couple of hours. So what that also tells us, Mr. Jackson, is that there's still a need out there. When we did it just back in during our Thanksgiving, we had served those 500 or 600 families within probably an hour and a half to 2 hours. Cars were lined up as early as 4:35 a.m. We don't start till 9 a.m. So people don't just sit out and wait if there's not a need. And so those are some of the things, not only our food program, but are these events that we are still trying to serve the community in terms of meals and or food insecurities.
And lastly, well, let's go back. For April 1st, you're going to be a SWOP. What time will there be a SWOP on April 1st?
We will be there from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. and or until we have run out of food.
Okay, folks, so there you go. April 1st, SWOP Community Help Builders right there at the corner of, that is Cleaver Boulevard and
MLK.
MLK, yep. So now you've got one more component before we start talking about the Workforce Development Program. You also have an Economic Development Program. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about that program?
Yep, and so with economic development, it is partnering in what we just kind of talked about with the financial literacy and being able to kind of speak to that from an economic standpoint. The second area that we'll talk a bit with more is jobs, right? And so we've now started our Aspire Workforce Development Program. We believe that that's key in terms of economic development, that we can support individuals to a point of self-sufficiency, whether that means entrepreneurship or whether that means a job in a stable industry such as construction. Thirdly, when we do our special events, whether it be our fatherhood classes or our Celebrating Men and Fathers event, we always have partners that are employment or workforce development individuals. And so we believe that jobs are key in terms of economic development. And so we continue to integrate those types of partnerships into the special events that we do, into our fatherhood program, and as we initiate new programs such as the Aspire Workforce Development Program.
So the Aspire Workforce Development Program, what inspired that program to come into existence?
So probably in one word, it was Senator Barbara Ann Washington. So we have been able to partner with Senator Washington on a number of different efforts, First Saturdays and some other things. And so our work with individuals such as in our fatherhood program, as we started to look and work with her, we felt like, and she felt like, that was a population that we could serve even greater by being able to create and support them with jobs. And the construction industry is sustainable in terms of with whatever trade that you decide you want to specialize in. We've got construction now, and in the foreseeable future, Kansas City is ripe in terms of whether it be just the airport and other data center, a detention center. All of that is growth in terms of Kansas City, and we want to be part of it. And those are careers that men and women can and should be able to participate in. So the the premise was, in terms of working with Senator Washington, that with what we were already doing in the community and with individuals and partnerships, it was a great leverage point for us to be able to create the new workforce development program. So it is Aspire Workforce Development, which is a pre-apprenticeship construction program.
And as we see those projects, especially within the urban core, I remember working with Gigi Owens, who works with J.E. Dunn, the East Patrol, and those people that was a, in some cases, people worked on that project from the beginning to the end. They transitioned from that program to the airport. Now they're going from the airport to all the other many projects across the city that are now being built. But also a bonus of that is if people decide to leave Kansas City and go someplace else, they have a tangible skill that will enable them to make a livable wage regardless of wherever they go, because there's construction and development happening across the United States.
Yep, that's exactly right. These are definitely transferable skills from a geographical standpoint, but Mr. Jackson, even from a industry perspective. So for example, when ours is focused on construction, but when participants go through our program, they get OSHA 10 certified, forklift certified, and then CPR and first aid certified. Those take forklift. They can go into another area, such as manufacturing or advanced manufacturing, which is growing as well. And the forklift certification is valid for those types of jobs as well. So it's not, you talk about and being able to transfer not only from a geography, but even from an industry perspective. And so for us, that is our program, and we continue to say this, is driven by opportunities. So whatever kind of opportunities we can open with our participants, whether it be construction, pre-apprentice programs, giving them certifications that help them with other industries, that's what we want to be able to do in terms of being able to create self-sufficiency and a sustainable economic lifestyle for these individuals.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Ms. Benita Powell, who is with the Total Man Community Development Corporation. We're going to be talking about their workforce development program. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson, hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. And today our guest is Ms. Benita Powell, who's with the Total Man Community Development Corporation. So this is a great program and opportunity. First, how do you have to be a part of the workforce apprenticeship program?
You have to be 18 years or older.
Okay. And as with anything, filling out a job application, there are requirements for every program. What are the program requirements for the construction apprenticeship program?
Actually, Mr. Jackson, they're pretty simple. The 18 years or older, they've got to be signed up for the military, and or we will sign them up at the time of their application. They've got to be able to pass a drug test and be able to work as a citizen in the U.S. And that's pretty much it.
So the COVID, I know that it says on the website, the COVID-19 testing and proof of vaccination, is that still one of the requirements?
No, it is not. Okay, and so as we started up again this spring, we actually changed that to not be a requirement. We hope that people are being safe at this point, but as a specific requirement, it is not.
So, Benita, do they have to have a high school diploma or a GED?
Yes, a high school diploma, GED, and we also recommend and would like for them to have a valid driver's license. And that is because it's not necessarily a requirement for us, but we know that sets them up for success with a potential construction employer, that's important that they be able to get back and forth to a job site.
And that is so true, because many of those sites were not available. I remember when we were talking about 5 years ago developing the airport, being on a committee and talking to people saying, okay, we've got to make sure a lot of people that are going to be coming to that way don't have cars. There has to be a shuttle service to the airport. And that was one of the things that I'm happy that they did make sure, so that those jobs were open to those who had vehicles as well as those who didn't have, or maybe, you know, transportation limited.
Exactly. And so, you know, again, it's not necessarily, you know, you may end up with having a project that's in, you know, the urban core, but sometimes it's not on a bus line. So we try to ensure that our participants have that. If they have challenges with their driver's license, we try to work. We have some partners in terms of legal assistance, and we try to work through those issues with them while they're in the program.
And what about if a person doesn't have that GED? Is that something that you all can help them with, getting that general equivalency diploma?
Certainly. We, as I mentioned earlier, we're all about partnerships. And so there are several good organizations out there that provide those services, such as KC Scholars. And so we will partner with existing organizations to get our participants enrolled to be able to complete, as I think it's referred to as a high point.
How many day? Well, how long is the program? How many weeks is the program? And how many days per week does the program meet?
The program is actually 5 weeks, and the participants meet Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. There are a couple of days within that 5 weeks where they meet a little longer, to about 1:30, and those are typically the days of the OSHA certification. But it is Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. We generally meet at Builders Association right over in North Kansas City, but we do have days where we are out getting exposure to trades and doing hands-on work out in the community.
And how many people, is there a limit to the number of people in each class?
So our target is to have small classes, 10 to 12, so that we ensure that all of the participants are getting that hands-on experience. And sometimes when they're working in groups, whether they're with the iron workers or metal sheet workers, sometimes having those small groups and being able to do those hands-on project is best when it is a small group. So we will have 3 cohorts. You mentioned that we have one that is currently going on. And so our goal is to have 10 at least 10 individuals in each of those cohorts.
And has the first program class already started?
It has. It started a couple of weeks ago. But the good thing is we are still in time for our next one. So our next program, and I'm going to look at my calendar real quick here, starts on Monday, April the 17th. So our conversation, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to come on today, because it gives individuals enough time to get in contact with us to do the intake and to get started on April 17th.
So I know usually for these programs, you've got to have steel-toed boots, you've got to have other personal protection equipment, and that can be a barrier to some people getting to the program. Do you all help with people who may need those steel-toed shoes or different things?
Absolutely, Mr. Jackson. We try to remove all of those barriers. So providing PPE is part of what we do as with the program. So we will provide those steel-toed boots. We will provide the hard hats, the glasses, the protective glasses, any of those things that they would need to start on that first job. And actually, they use it as part of the program, because as I mentioned, they are doing some hands-on projects and getting some hands-on exposure even during that 5 weeks. So they are making use of that PPE even during the training.
Some of the programs in Kansas City, just to get your OSHA 10 can cost you $100 to $150 out of your pocket. Is there any cost to anybody who applies for this program and is accepted for the training?
No, the program is absolutely free. We, again, appreciate Senator Washington in terms of providing that funding through the state. And so we are able to provide the program totally free. As you mentioned earlier with the PPE, we try to also remove the barriers in terms of people being able to participate by providing the PPE. And then we are also able to support with gas cards. So again, trying to remove one of those barriers that people may have.
And I know one of the things that is so needed on jobs are soft skills. How do you all help applicants with those soft skills? Because those soft skills can make or break your job, or they can get you the job, or they can keep you from getting the job.
Yep, and we know that. And so as part of the 5 weeks, soft skills are one of the things that we touch on early on within the first week. So with those soft skills, we touch on time, right? In terms of being on time to job sites. If you are supposed to be there at 8, that doesn't mean you're driving in onto the site at 8. That means getting there in advance of that. So we talk about being on time. We talk about teamwork. Because most of the projects in construction will be all about teamwork and how you work as a team member. We also talk about communication skills and how important that is. So we talk about those and other soft skills and as a priority and doing and generally touch on those and have days set aside for that at the beginning of each cohort.
I had a commander in the military who said on time is late. So if the meeting started at 10 o'clock, he didn't expect you to be walking through the door at 10 o'clock. And with him, it was, okay, the meeting starts at 10. I need to be in the door, have gotten my coffee, in my seat by 9:45. And that is the one thing that a lot of people don't. The business world, especially construction, works differently. Their hours are going to be earlier. They may be longer. So, and unfortunately, a way in which a lot of people may get weeded out is you continuously have a struggle getting there on time.
Yeah, and we talk about that because we say, you know, 5 minutes for you, you don't think 5 minutes is a big deal, right? But at a certain point, if you're a construction company, you're already working on slim margins. You've already bid the project. So, you know, you're trying to work within a certain budget. So if you have 100 individuals working on a project, each one of them are 5 minutes late. Then all of a sudden 5 minutes is costing you, you know, $10 and, you know, per person, 100 people, 5 days a week. Then you can imagine if you're on a 6-month project, then those 5 minutes over a number of people have just cost you, you know, $100,000, right? And so where as an individual, you don't necessarily think about, oh, it's not a big deal, 5 minutes. It is a big deal. And so you're absolutely like right in that we try to stress that with all of our participants.
Another thing that a lot of people may not have is a resume. Do you all help with them develop a resume, make sure it's an accurate resume so that they can present themselves in the best possible light when they're meeting a potential employer?
We do. We resume development is part of what we do as part of the program. Whether they don't have a resume at all, we help them create one, or whether they have one, but we also take a look at it to see if it is up to date, if it is relevant to construction and bringing out the skill sets or identifying the skill sets that would be more relevant in terms of construction and making it construction ready, I'd say.
Are there any other important skills? Because not one skill is unimportant. Are there any other important skills that people may learn going through y'all's program?
So we also do, in addition to helping them with a resume, we do mock interviews because we believe that whether they're going for a job, whether they are applying for apprenticeship, mock interviews and how they come across in terms of their enthusiasm, their communication, how they present themselves are important. And so we go through and have mock interviews with the participants. We also recognize that with some of the apprenticeship programs, they require some testing. That testing could be include problem solving, may include math. And so we go through construction math, reading a tape measure, things of that nature that are relevant to construction, to the construction industry. We also, if we find that one of the participants are interested in a trade that may require a little bit more math, we have partnered and we have tutors available to help with that math if that is needed. So we try to make sure that we're addressing the needs from an employer apprenticeship perspective while also preventing or eliminating as many barriers as we can.
Very important question. We know that, unfortunately, for some people it may not be a good thing, and some people it's a great thing, that weed is legal in the state of Missouri, but that's the one thing from football players to basketball players to any other player to the common person on the street that can unfortunately deny them an opportunity. Is this something that is tested for in construction?
It is, and we test for it as part of the apprenticeship program. So we recognize and know that the construction industry at this point has not changed in that you are going to be drug tested. You cannot expect to be in construction, be up on somebody's roof or doing sheetrock or whatever that may be, putting in electrical wiring, and not be in control of all of your faculties, right? And so we are still requiring being able to pass we're still doing drug screening and requiring that you be able to pass a drug test to be able to complete and graduate from the program. Construction companies are still requiring that. And so for us, we want to put our participants in the best or prepare them. And so that is part of being prepared for going into construction.
And as we were mentioning earlier when we were talking about it, in some cases, your graduates may not go on and work in construction. They may go and work in Amazon in a warehouse or in another warehouse. But are there other opportunities available as a result of completing the program that they may be able to qualify for?
Yeah, so we believe that there are three paths in terms of them completing the program. One is that they apply for and test into one of the apprenticeship programs and for a specific trade. So that could be one. The second is that they become more employable, and that could be through a manufacturing company and or through a construction company directly, and they have at that point gotten some exposure and have those certifications. The third thing, Mr. Jackson, is that some individuals may have been doing some sorts of construction prior to coming in. They may be in our program to get some more exposure, to kind of hone in on some of their skills, and they may say at the end of the program, I really want to be self-employed, and I really want to be able to just run a company myself. And so in that way, we want to help them get the appropriate documents, the business license, their EIN number, those things that are required to be in business. And so that is also a path that we recognize in terms of some of our participants coming out. So we believe that any of those three and all of those three can lead to self-sufficiency and create an economic path for our participants.
So as we start closing out and winding up, if people have a question or they'd like to give a phone call to get more information, is there a number they can give a call to get more information on the program?
Yes. Our number is 1-800-825-0490. Again, that's 1-800-825-0490. They can also send us an information request through our website, which is totalmancdc.org, and just go on there, and it has a tab for you to ask for information, and that automatically sends us in an email, and so we can answer any questions that way as well.
And again, that next class starts when, Benita?
It starts Monday, April 17th, but we are taking applications now, so please feel free to utilize that number or that email today to go ahead and get in contact with us so that we can set up an intake with you and go ahead and get you prepared to start on Monday, April 17th.
And as we close out, what does Total Man CDC have any upcoming events that they're going to be that the public is invited to and can open out other than the April 1st one at SWOPE?
Yeah, so we will also have more information to come about our Celebrating Men and Fathers event. So that will occur this late spring or sometime in June. And so that'll be something else that we have coming up. As you mentioned, we are partnering with other organizations like the D Foundation for Financial Literacy. We have the one starting this week, but I expect that we'll have more of those to come. So in the immediate term, we have the Aspire Workforce Development Program, the first, which starts April 17th. Our first Saturday's Easter edition is April 1st. And then, Mr. Jackson, I also mentioned that I've talked about fatherhood a little bit, but we also have some fatherhood classes that are starting up next week. They are starting up at four different locations. It's a 10-week series where men can voluntarily come in. It's 2 hours a week at those various locations, and that's open to the community. And so we can provide, if somebody is interested in that, they come every, like I said, for 10 weeks. During each of those weeks, they get some parent education. It's men talking to men. We also bring in some of those resources that we talked about could be potential barriers. And they go through this for 10 weeks, and we have a graduation. Along the way, they get good parenting, networking information from other dads. They also, we have some, we feed them a good meal. We have some other gift card incentives. And so please feel free to call 1-800-825-0490 if any, if there are any men that may be interested in joining our spring 2023 cohort for fatherhood, which starts up next week.
And organizations like yours don't exist without some great people, volunteers, and other community partners. If people are interested, how can they go about getting in contact with Total Man CDC to help with the mission in which you all have undertaken?
We are always looking for good volunteers, good partners, and so definitely reach out to that same phone number of 1-800-825-0490. You can also send us an email, and I personally will respond to try to establish what your interests are as a volunteer and or how we could partner with your organization.
So I want to thank Ms. Powell for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Folks, Daylight Savings Time is upon us and starts this Sunday, so don't forget to set your clocks forward, spring forward one time. And this is also a perfect time to check the battery in your smoke alarm. The smoke alarm will provide critical notice during a fire and can help save lives. Evergy is giving away free energy kits that can include up to 20 LED light bulbs, 2 shower heads, water pipe insulation, and 2 smart strips. You can call 855-907-6930 or visit the Evergy Connect Center at 1710 Paseo Boulevard to schedule an appointment or to get more information. Election workers, if you're interested in working the election poll on the April 4th election, contact the Kansas City Election Board at 816-842-4820. And folks, absentee balloting is open for the April 4th election from 8 to 5 at Union Station. So if you're going to be out of the city, then you have the ability to cast your ballot early. And then in another 2 weeks, it will be early voting season. You don't have to have a reason. For absentee balloting, you do have to have a reason, but for early voting, you don't. So for Cowtown Conversations, it's been your host, Joseph Jackson. Join us next week for a great episode. I hope everyone has a great day. Stay safe. Try to stay dry and stay tuned for Signal to Noise.